So, we're starting in Luke chapter 6 today. All right, I'll start off. I wonder where library girl and Chris are. So anyway, we got a few on the radio too. So anyway, Luke chapter 6 verse 1 says, "And it came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first, that he went through the cornfields, and his disciples plucked the ears of corn and did eat, rubbing them in their hands. And certain of the Pharisees said unto them, Why do you that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day?" And let me stop there, because I was reading in John chapter 9 this morning. And there's a similar situation where they accuse him of breaking the law of God on Sabbath because he healed that blind man. He told him to go into the pool of Siloam and wash the clay and spittle out of his eyes. What amazes me is when we're in discussion with Sunday keepers, for example, they use these types of verses to say that it's okay to break the Sabbath. And I just have to I feel like a cartoon character throwing my head back and forth really fast. You know how they do that and they go to, I make that weird noise. I go, are you really, really wanting to say what you just said? Because think about this. They're using the Pharisees who Jesus repeatedly proved were in error in regards to the Sabbath day. And they're using their method of saying that Jesus Christ broke the Sabbath as it being okay to break the Sabbath, even though Jesus proves he wasn't breaking it, and he proved that it's not right to break the Sabbath. I just can't understand how they actually think it's okay to say Jesus committed sin. And so it's okay for them. At least that's, you know, more or less what they're saying. But verse 3 says, "And Jesus answering them said, Have you not read so much as this, what David did when himself was a-hungered? And they which were with him, how he went into the house of God and did take and eat the showbread and gave also to them that were with him, which is not lawful to eat but for the priests alone. And he said unto them that the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath." Now, Sister White says in my own little notes here, I only got this one little thing here. Desire of Ages, page 285, she says, "If it was right for David to satisfy his hunger by eating of the bread that had been set apart to a holy use, then it was right for the disciples to supply their need by plucking the grain upon the sacred hours of the Sabbath. The disciples, in doing the work of Christ, were engaged in God's service, and that which was necessary for the accomplishment of this work, it was right to do on the Sabbath day." And it's like a rabbi working on the Sabbath day in the temple. Jesus and the disciples were okay to gather food. Besides, it's not as if they were farmers who did this work 6 days a week either. Now, if they were farmers, or if they, even then, a farmer does not, you know, cultivate or harvest, rather, his crop by going to the field and picking it by hand and rubbing it in his hands. They're just getting a meal. But the thing that gets me is how the people of the world, you know, the world like to use this to their end and say it's okay to break the Sabbath, and they just don't get it. You're actually agreeing with the Pharisees. You're actually saying that it's okay to break the fourth commandment because a Pharisee, who Jesus proves is wrong, is doing it. And it's like, oh, you're like a cartoon character, you know? So anyway, verse 6, "And it came to pass also on another Sabbath that he entered into the synagogue and taught, and there was a man whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, and that he might find an accusation against him. But he knew their thoughts, and said to the man which had the withered hand, Rise up and stand forth in the midst. And he arose and stood forth. Then said Jesus unto them, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? And looking round about upon them, he said unto the man, Stretch forth thy hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And they were filled with madness, and communed one with another that they might do what they might do to Jesus. And it came to pass in those days that he went out into a mountain to pray, and continued all night in prayer to God. And when it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and of them he chose 12, whom also he named apostles. Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, called Zealots, and Judas, the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which was also the traitor, also was the traitor. And he came down with them. Let me just stop there. It's quite a few verses. Is Lynn able to read tonight, or is anybody else able to read too? Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I got kicked out earlier, but it was my fault. I dropped my keyboard. Sorry about that. But continuing with Luke chapter 6, verse 17. And he came down with them and stood in the plain, and the company of his disciples and a great multitude of people out of all Judea and Jerusalem, and from the seacoast of Tyre and Sidon, which came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And they were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed, and the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him, and healed them all. And he lifted up his eyes on his disciples, and said, Blessed be ye poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are ye that hunger now, for ye shall be filled. Blessed are ye that weep now, for ye shall laugh. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast out your name as evil, for the Son of Man's sake. Rejoice ye in that day, and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did your fathers unto the prophets. But woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation. Woe unto you that are full, for ye shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for ye shall mourn and reap. Woe unto you when men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to Luke 6, verse 30. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners, to receive as much again. But love your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great. And ye shall be the children of the Highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. And he spake a parable unto them, Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? And I'll read one more. Luke chapter 6, verse 40. The disciple is not above his master, but everyone that is perfect shall be as his master.
Okay, verse 41. Oh, wait, I was just thinking when you were reading all that, where does it appear in the earlier verses? Love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you, and stuff like that. I just started thinking, this is, you know, just, it comes to mind. Why do we have to go through all this, you know, when you think about this? Why do we have to go through all this since it's not going to be on all the other planets? That's what some of the mindset is. Why do we have to go through that? And all I can think is, thank you, Father, because you must have a mighty work for us to do when we get home. And I am not going to question. Yeah. But think about that. If the thought brings to mind character building. Yeah, pick up your cross and follow me. Still, there are no crosses on the other planets. There is no need for character building on the other planets. Where all the other, because they have not fallen. They have not eaten from that tree. Earth is the only planet that Satan was cast to. They did no sin. Exactly. And so it's just amazing to me how the Lord has got something planned for us. He's got something really, really amazing for us to do. And, you know, it's kind of like the trick question that the serpent asked Eve in regards to knowing good and evil. There's a reason the Lord's allowing us to know this stuff that the other planets, the other people just don't know. He's given us a responsibility he has not given anybody else. We have to understand this for some reason. I'm not going to second guess them. I'm not going to question them. The devil will try to tempt me to think like the rest of the world to say, why are we going through this? There's no reason for this. I don't want to be bothered with this and walk away. But there's a reason. He's got his reasons. We can trust him because nothing evil comes from above. Verse 38, I guess, says, it give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, and as shall men give into your bosom, for with the same measure that you meet with all, it shall be measured to you again. Tithing is a good example of that verse right there. Given, it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over is just, okay, good measure is, you know, you get what you pay for kind of a thing. I'm looking at it like going into the market. Good measure. You know, I pay for so much, so I'm getting a good measure. I'm just going to break this down to the base elements. Press down, which means, you know, you tap on it or whatever and get it to where it really fits in the thing. There's no air bubbles. It's really pressed down. Shaken together, too, you know. And then not only that, it's running over. My cup overfloweth. All right? In other words, the Lord, when you give, and it's not just money either. When you give of yourself, the way the Lord returns the blessing is mind-boggling. I've seen him do it with tithings. To this day, I can't understand how he does it, and I won't explain it because I don't know how he does it. How 90% of your money goes further than 100% of your money. I just can't understand how he does that. And to this day. And so I've seen those blessings for many years, and I'll never stop. I don't even think. When I see the money come in, I know right off the bat, 10% of it's not mine, it's his. And it's not even asking much. That's not even counting love offerings either. But with the blessings, though, like giving of self or sharing Christ with others or just being Christ-like for other people to read, you know, like we always say, we might be the only Bible some people read. The blessing that returns upon us is, you know, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. So it's just going to be just as good. But this is that one, it's in the Old Testament in a couple of areas, of course, and I believe where Isaiah mentions it too, where the Lord, this is one area where he actually tells us to test him. Hey, LG, how do, sister? I was late too. So, no big deal. Okay, where were we? I was supposed to start at verse 41. Okay. All right, thanks, Lynn. Verse 41. And why beholdest thou the mote? Or why are you checking out that big old beam? Or, yeah, I guess that's a beam. A mote. Isn't that a mote like a twig or something, actually? Yeah, I think a mote is like a sliver or a speck, maybe. Because he says beam next. So why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceiveth not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou sellest, beholdest not the beam that is in thy own eye? Thou hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. And I can see this happening in my early walk as a Christian. I used to judge, I used to see all these motes in people's eyes, And I myself didn't have a clear understanding of the scriptures anyway. I had this big beam in mind. I couldn't see where I was even walking. Thanks, Library Girl. Mote, for those of you on the radio, small particle. So, but we always like to see that small particle. To us, it's a big old beam, you know. Because, boy, oh boy, can I tell where you're messing up, you know. Well, I mess up too. But we always want to point the finger. And it's not pointing the finger either when we choose not to yoke ourselves unequally. I was dealing with an email today where a young man tells me he doesn't have any problem going with, he keeps Sabbath, but he feels it's okay to, you know, to go and worship on Sunday with Sunday keepers. And he says, because Jesus sat with the sinners too. I says, yeah, Jesus sat with the sinners, but he didn't go worship with them. You know, it says, touch not the unclean thing. Yeah, how can two walk together except they be agreed? Or come out of her, my people. You know, Revelation 18:4. And I says, I'll go in. And he says, well, you mean you wouldn't walk in her home? He says, no, I didn't say that. What I said was, you can go in their homes, share Jesus with them. You can see them on the street, share Jesus with them. But when you walk into their church, are you not going to become the hypocrite later on when they understand the truth that you're supposed to be sharing with them? And they're going to think, well, wait a second, if this is truth, why are you in my Sunday-keeping church? So, there's my 2 cents. Where I leave off, 42? Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, 43. I already read 42. Okay, for a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bringeth forth good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. So that's another thing I was trying to bring up with this person. You know, you're walking into a place where you know you're not supposed to walk into. There's a lot of corrupt trees in there. They're not like-minded brethren. Yes, I know you could walk into a tree or a church filled with like-minded brethren, and they're all in sin, some of them. You know, most of them are in sin. Well, actually, all of them are. Because I was trying to answer the objection before it came, because the fact of the matter is, Jesus sat in the synagogue. And you knew everybody in the synagogue was in sin. But they were like-minded brethren. He wouldn't be putting off a negative message there. But if he was to walk into a satanic church, then there would be a problem. I should have brought that up. Continuing. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. And I'll read one more, because in the topic changes on verse 46. To give LG a chance to read some scripture here. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart is the mouth speaketh. In other words, what's in there, what's in the heart is what's coming out. Okay, Brother Nick, let me answer this question real quick, LG. Is it okay to worship in a pagan temple with Sabbath keepers? Now, that, I know Sister White, isn't it somewhere in Sister White's writings where she says you can rent Sunday-keeping churches until you can actually build a church? Or was it say, or did she say that you can rent schools? You know, I would have a problem. I mean, there's a building in Oxford that I could see having no problem with renting. It used to be a church. They rent it out as a church, or they'll rent it out as a hall. There is no steeple. There is no cross. That I wouldn't have a problem with. But like with what Laswell was doing, I didn't realize it at the time, and I started to bring it up later. We're renting. You know, it was supposed to only be for a couple of weeks until we get our own building, but it was renting for years. And this was a Methodist church. Now, that, you know, that you're touching on, you know, ticklish ground there, but a pagan temple, if it's an out-and-out pagan temple, well, I wouldn't even go anywhere near it. Like a New Age church that, like the one that believes in a cosmic Christ and stuff like that, no, I would not go to a church. I wouldn't even approach them. No. You know, like I wouldn't go to a Catholic church. You know, in other words, could I go to a Catholic church and rent that for a Sabbath-keeping church service? No. I mean, the Catholic Church is just drenched with paganism and statues and crucifixes and all sorts of. I mean, I would be so uncomfortable there, as would my Lord. I don't, you know, I would not want to put him to a foolish test. Oh, okay. Thanks, David. Go ahead there, LG. I'm sorry.
Hi, everybody. Well, I agree, you know, there with you, Nick. And also, I wouldn't want to, I certainly wouldn't want to rent, you know, somebody else's space because you're financially supporting them also. You know, if you just rent, you know, maybe a plain hall or some school auditorium or something, that's one thing. But to blatantly support some pagan or Wiccan temple or or Catholic, there's just, yeah, I mean, that no, you can do something better with your money. Fine, I mean, it would be better for people to meet in a park outside, you know. There are other options. So I will finish up here with Luke, I got Luke 6, verse 46. And why call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. That finishes up Luke chapter 6.